Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another free show from the Jerry Will Show. This is for everybody. I apologize for being 30 minutes late. It happened because when I set up Rumble, I put in a specific time when I would start. And apparently, when you do that on Rumble and you don't start, well, it just starts without you. Who would know? Anyway, damn thing. So I had to reconfigure everything. I didn't get over to the JerryWillShow.com website and reconfigure that. I'll just do that tomorrow. It's not that important because I wanted everyone to be watching here anyway. The Rumble rants, where you can leave your comments, things you want to say, you know, that works, I think, so much better than our Discus on JerryWillShow.com. I like it, and that's why we use it. So, anyway, got a dynamite show for you this evening, and I just want to say that it was very kind of William to take a standby while I fumbled through that ordeal. It wasn't easy, and I don't type that fast, but boy, my fingers were like buttered, you know, and I had it done. So without any further delay, you know who this is. This is the fellow that has been on many times with us since 2019. Every time he comes on, we learn so much more. It's uncanny the precision that he delivers his information. He's becoming really well-known worldwide for his precision and accuracy. And to have him here with us tonight, it's only because he's a good friend and he agreed to do it and he cares about you folks. So let's bring him on. How are you doing this evening, William?
Hey, Jerry. Thanks for having me on the show again.
Absolutely. We love having you here. I was telling Kathy earlier, if we were neighbors, I'd probably be bugging you a lot. It's a good thing we live so far apart.
Well, you do owe me a visit when you're heading on up to Vegas.
And we will, without a doubt. We certainly do plan on that for sure, because it's long overdue. Folks, William and I have never really met in person. It's always been virtually like this. And mostly, it's only due to this crazy COVID nonsense that we've been enduring the past couple of years. So we're going to be traveling this year, and I'm looking forward to stopping in and spending some time with my buddy and just having some casual conversation and, you know, maybe stuff about crypto too, who knows, but at least it'll be a nice visit with he and his lovely wife, Catherine. There are already people, I don't know if you're watching, William, but in the rant room, there's already a whole bunch of folks who have written things.
I can see that, yes.
Okay. I want to start off with a question that I have, that someone asked me, and then we'll get into whatever direction you want to go. But I'm curious about this, since it was brought up to me, because I was like, well, hell if I know. I don't have a clue. What would happen, let's say you were in Venezuela, and you have $500,000 Venezuelan dollars in Bitcoin, and I don't even know what that would be. But let's say it'd be 20 Bitcoins. I'm just making up a number.
Venezuela.
Yeah, and the currency just goes to hell. It's no longer there. It's just gone. Now, what is your Bitcoin worth?
It's worth the value of Bitcoin worldwide.
Okay, because the question was asked to me was, well, if the dollar just tanks.
Doesn't matter.
And actually,
if the dollar tanks, the value of the Bitcoin continues. Actually, it goes up because it takes more dollars to buy that Bitcoin. So when a local currency, see, currency devaluations do not affect Bitcoin in any way. That's one of the that's one of the perks of having Bitcoin, because it's based on a price discovery market. It is not a fiat currency. It's not based on the decree of a government saying to the market or to traders who trade the currency, the value of this currency is such and such based on a decree of a central bank, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
So Bitcoin, no one controls Bitcoin, right? It's who determines the price is no one and everyone simultaneously. So it really doesn't matter. In fact, the question becomes now, the fact that currencies are collapsing, including the dollar, is one of the reasons Bitcoin continues to go up in value. It takes more and more dollars to buy one Bitcoin or one Satoshi.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, well, I've noticed, I was writing to a friend of ours, Karen, and we were discussing Bitcoin and so forth. And she was, yeah, well, maybe, you know, maybe I should. No, really, you should. She says, well, you know, I wrote her back and I said, Karen, did you know that since yesterday, Bitcoin went up $3,000 in value? She's like, are you kidding?
Right.
No. I said, do you know how long I held on to a few ounces of gold? And I actually lost money when I sold it. And I had been holding on to it for well over a year. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I lost. If I did, it wasn't that much because it's very close to break even. But the point is, it just, you know, it didn't perform the way I thought that it would.
Right.
You know, when you and I were talking about this in 2019, I think it was in 2020 that I made that investment. So a couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, you know, well, this is good. It was going up and down, you know, like they do. But
Bitcoin went from $8,000 to $68,000 during that time you were holding gold.
Yeah, I know. And the real kick in the pants that people just don't seem to really understand. And it was a wake-up moment for me, and you and I have talked about this.
You mean the orange pill moment?
Yeah, the orange pill moment.
Right.
Is when I realized that if I had $1,000 in 1990, mm-hmm. and I brought it forward to today, I'm still holding $1,000 in my hands. But right. its intrinsic value is significantly less now than it was then.
Terms of its purchasing power.
Exactly.
I see. Yes, correct. Because what we have is double-digit inflation. Inflation is about 16%. Since early 2020, so you lost 16% per year.
Yeah, and since 1990, probably much more than that.
Oh, then you, yeah, so we're talking about, so if we average it out over from 1990 to present, you're about 10% inflation. So you lost 10% a year, every year. It's compounding. So you lost a lot of money.
10% per year. Let me think about that for a second. 1990 to 2020 is 30. That's $300.
Mm-hmm.
So now it's worth $700 in purchasing power.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, well, that's disappointing.
So the purchasing power of $1,000, let's say in 1990, is somewhere about $200 today.
Yeah.
So in other words, right? If you had $200 back in 1990, it could buy you what? So $200 then, right? You would need $1,000 today to buy what $200 back then? Let's say $250, I think it's more accurate.
So you're saying it lost 75%?
That's right.
Okay, because my math.
And if you have a euro or yen or any other currency, you lost even more. See, so this is the thing. People say they understand inflation, but they don't really.
Yeah, I don't.
And the people that are defending the dollar saying, well, I don't know about this Bitcoin, you know, they don't understand inflation. They don't understand purchasing power. They don't understand what fiat currency means. They don't understand trading markets when it comes to currency markets. They don't understand debt or credit. And I don't blame them because I did not understand any of these things until I took a full deep dive down a rabbit hole starting around 2005 on this.
Wow.
And I became a fast, hard, committed student. And I didn't have that breakthrough moment until around 2009, 2010. And then in that moment, I got orange-pilled with Bitcoin because I finally got it. And that's when I took the dive in Bitcoin in 2010. And it was because I understood all those things in terms of markets, price discovery, currencies, fiat, gold, right, as a base. The fact that gold has been completely eradicated as a backing of any of the dollar of the currency system since 1971. But I understood all of that, understanding the history of fiat currencies, how long they last historically, and knowing that we were at the point of very close to the shelf life ending for the US dollar. At the time that the 2008 crisis, we were just at that point where historically the fiat currency that dominated that era began to collapse. And if you think about it, 2008 was as much of a currency crisis as it was a liquidity crisis. They were able to prevent the liquidity crisis resulting in a complete deleveraging of the global financial system, but they were not able to mitigate the inflation. So what did they do, right? They hid the inflation. They stripped out food and fuel and cost of living out of the inflation index, which they call CPI. So people would not demand pay raises. They could keep Social Security, right, at a locked level. So unions would not demand more money. This is all done for political reasons. And so they wouldn't have to raise interest rates, because if your currency is declining, you have to raise interest rates. So they had to keep interest rates at zero, strip out the CPI, make it insignificant in terms of what it's really measuring with inflation. Tell everyone inflation is still 2%. It claimed to everybody that employment's only 4%. Do all these sorts of tricks and maneuvers, because there was no true real recovery. And as a result, asset prices such as stocks kept going up in value, partly because they injected more, they injected currency for the first time into the system so that the too big to fail banks would buy those assets. But more importantly, Jerry, and this is what people don't understand, especially the ones that defend their 401k, Roth IRA, is the fact that because the currency purchasing power kept declining, it required more and more and more dollars to buy that one share of stock.
Oh.
So the value, if you subtracted the inflation from the stock would be drastically reduced. In other words, the value of the stock, let's say, went from $20 to $100. You subtract the inflation out over a 12-year period, right, or longer, a 15-year period. The value of the stock goes, you realize it just went from $20 up to maybe like $29. So that, in terms of the true purchasing power, if you sold the stock. So a lot of people don't understand this. They don't understand that price discovery since 2008 has been completely destroyed. And that's where Bitcoin came in. And that is why it was invented in 2009 to deal with this, to make sure that, to ensure that there would be a world currency, a people's world currency that would continue to be a store of value, to function like currency does, but also be a store of value like gold is simultaneously.
Mind-boggling. It really is. Mm-hmm. You know, in flashing back while you're talking about that, I just, you know what a wad of 20s, it's $1,000, it's a wad of 20s, you know, it feels good in your hand. And even though it's only worth $250, your mind is telling you it's still a wad of 20s that says $1,000 on it. And that was the problem I was having, is the illusion of what it is, how the tangibility of it is, versus what the actuality will be from 1 year to the next or one decade to the next. And it suddenly just dawned on me, this whole thing just, like you said, an orange pill moment. It's just like, blam. Mm-hmm. It just occurred. So anyway, that's the reason why I wanted to ask you about that, because I know, well, I know there are a lot of other people curious about that. If the dollar fails, you know, well, Bitcoin's, you're measuring it in dollars. Now what are you going to measure it against? Well, you know, I guess...
You'll measure it in Bitcoin.
Yeah.
You'll measure Bitcoin in terms of what Bitcoin can purchase, because if you live in a third world country where the currency is failing, for instance, like Argentina or Turkey, for instance, what ends up happening, and this is happening right now, you don't hear about it on CNN or Fox News, because their goal is to make you a compliant tax paying, dollar holding, fiat savings, compliant citizen who trust what they hear and don't ask questions. Mm-hmm. But what's being reported outside the United States is that these currencies are collapsing so much. People look at what's happening in Russia. They're moving all their money in a collapsing currency into Bitcoin. And now if you want any types of goods and services that are in demand or that are needed, not wanted, but needed, you can then pay directly without any third party interference or government or bank, anybody, any third party go between directly to the seller. You could buy, you can purchase directly through Bitcoin. And what ends up happening here is that they have far more purchasing power. What they're discovering is they have far more purchasing power when they convert their fiat currency into Bitcoin and then base their entire local ecosystem, their personal economy, using Bitcoin, because they are operating like a central bank.
Right. Except in Russia, Coinbase shut them off.
Well, here's the thing. Coinbase, first of all, Coinbase has to do that because of the SEC would crack them down and shut them down. First of all, that's not legal. There's an issue of legality behind all of that. And that goes against the whole concept of cryptocurrency in general. But that this is the reason why all the Russians who kept their Bitcoin on Coinbase instead of moving it to their private wallets were the ones who got frozen out of their own money. Uh-huh. Out of their own money. Now, I don't think the United States is in a state of war with Russia. So why are they doing that?
Yeah, huh? It really is there are some shady things going on.
That's right. I mean, it'd be one thing, right? If we're talking about sanctions, that's one thing, but we're talking about regular citizens who are being bereft of their money, like what happened in Canada.
Yeah.
Right. And we call Russia communist or fascist Russia, right? Who's really the fascist here?
I know. Yeah, it's definitely the wrong move. I agree with that. Yeah. But it brings up an interesting point, because you said if they had their funds on Coinbase, they're locked out of their money.
If they didn't move their funds.
If they didn't move their funds, right. Which is what you and I, you've helped me with this. Mm-hmm. I am so grateful. What we're talking about next year, folks, is a hard wallet. Now, that's, if you're not familiar with it, like I wasn't, you've got like mental imagery of, okay, what is a hard wallet? What does that mean? There's hard wallets and soft wallets. Soft wallets are software. Hard wallets, they are a physical device. And this physical device, think of it like you are your own private bank. That's what I'm thinking. And you move your cryptocurrency onto this device. Let me show you what it looks like. I've got it right here. This is a Trezor, T-R-E-Z-O-R, Model T. Take a look at that, folks. You see this? This little gizmo right here. That could hold $1 trillion. I'm not kidding. It just plugs in to the end here. plugs in, connects into the internet. And in order for you to use this, you have another device, which I'm not going to unplug and bring up here because it's plugged in. But it is a digital security key. And between those two items, when you connect in to wherever you might have your digital currency, it sounds like an arduous experience to figure this out. That's how I viewed it. It's like, I don't know how the hell I'm ever going to figure this shit out. William walked me through one step at a time. It took about an hour, maybe hour and a half, because I had questions. I was making mistakes. He says, no, do this, do that, do this, do that. And then he said, now you do it, and I'll just watch. We were doing screen sharing. I did it. And it's like, hold on a second, I get this. It's really like when you were learning to drive and you sit there behind the wheel, you have to put on your seatbelt, turn the key, start it, put it in gear, put your foot on the brake. But all those things you take for granted now, they were completely unfamiliar and foreign to you. So you have to learn how to do each one of those little steps in order to effectively go down the street. And it also includes, keeping on your side of the road, driving, braking, accelerating, all that stuff. That's a very complicated series of events if you stop and think about it. You had to learn each one of these little steps, and that's what William did for Kathy and I. He taught us each little step. And it really is not rocket science, though it seems like it at first, because you're totally unfamiliar. But if you put your crypto on something like this little jobby here, now, who can get to that, William?
Nobody.
And why is that?
Well, for a number of reasons. First of all, there's a number of security apparatuses that makes it almost impossible for them to penetrate it. Also, the fact that they don't have access to your C key. Also, there is other things that protect that crypto. So, first of all, it's almost impossible. Even if they worked to get it, they would need to have your access code, your C key. They would also need to know exactly where to go in order to extract it, which would be impossible without that C key. Right. So physically, they couldn't even. They wouldn't be able to. They wouldn't be able to access that money. So that's another factor that, unless they can physically get into your home, get that information from you, right?
But they couldn't get it.
It's almost impossible.
If they couldn't get it from you, there's no way in hell they're going to figure this out.
No way in hell. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned a seed key, so let's talk about that.
Sure.
The what that term means is that when you're setting all this up, you're going through several steps to set it up. There, it's very secure. There's going to come a point during the setup that they're going to go, now we're going to give you a seed key. I'm like, oh, hell, what is that? You want to make sure you don't lose this, because if you lose it, you're screwed. You lose the keys to your car, there is no one else making keys. Your car is effectively just sidelined. So they give you the seed key. Now, if you want to play along, grab a sheet of paper, write down, just open a book, look at a word. Oh, look at that one. It says through. Write it down. Find 12 words. The computer's doing this for you. You're not doing this for yourself, but this is just to play along so you understand. It's going to generate 12 words that don't make a sentence, that don't mean a damn thing. It's just 12 words. If push comes to shove and you need to get into this, you're going to need those 12 words. If you don't have it, you don't get in. As a matter of fact, nobody alive can get in. There isn't a way to get in. you're just screwed if you don't have those 12 words. Well, some people would say, oh, well, you know, I've got my camera on my phone. I'll just take a picture of the piece of paper. Guess what? If it's on the cloud, somebody will find it. You don't do that. No, what you do is you write it down number by number. The order they're in is just as important as the words themselves. And you put it someplace safe. Maybe you make 2 or 3 copies. Put one over there, put one over there, and send one to a friend or have them put it in their safe, or your attorney put it in a safe, whatever. But you've got
You want to give it to your attorney. You don't want to give it to a friend. Trust me, Jerry. So, because if they have your C key and that friendship goes sour and they know where your physical device is, they can get in. So you want to give everyone out there listening to this, you probably want to give it to your attorney. That C key will be sealed, right? And you have your attorney has explicit instructions that that C key would only be open at the time of your death or a medical emergency where someone designated as an executor or your spouse would then be able to open and access that C key. And you could also set up multi-sig, Jerry. And this is something where it would require two unique passwords, even if you have the C key, to open up that crypto. So in other words, your attorney can have a password, a set of numbers, and let's say your wife, for instance, on your, God forbid, your premature passing, where Kathy would have that. She would have the numbers. She would have the numbers that she normally accesses with. Your attorney would have that set of numbers. Plus your attorney would have that C key under lock and seal. It would only be opened, right? And then it would require those two sets of numbers for Kathy to have access to that Bitcoin.
So you see, folks, it's incredibly secure. And that's why I say, when you think of these little doodads here, think of it like this is your own personal Wells Fargo. This is your own personal bank. Now, you notice there's a screen on here. You probably can see it's just a touch screen. And when this thing lights up, it's going to ask you to touch it. And when you touch it, it's going to say, what's the passcode? If you got to that point already, you know what the passcode is. You touch the little tiny numbers, which are actually quite difficult for me, William. And it opens up. And then on the screen on your computer, it opens up and it says, okay, touch your security key. It's not like you're clicking buttons, but you reach over and you just touch it. Aha, now the whole thing opens. You can go forward. It gets a little bit more complicated in the security aspects beyond this. But the bottom line is that if you're wondering, okay, I'm going to have some Bitcoin. I made the jump. I put in $100 or $1,000 or whatever. Sold your house. You're putting in $300,000. Whatever it is, you put it on this online thing called Coinbase. If you don't hold it, do you really own it? Can someone at some point in time from some agency or who knows who come along and say, you know what? Saw your account there on Coinbase and sorry, we have to take that. See around. If you don't hold
Jerry, it brings up a good question. If they could just shut your accounts down like they did in Canada, like they did on, and I'm not just talking about Bitcoin, right? We're talking about, or cryptocurrency, we're talking about bank accounts, savings accounts, your 401k, which they didn't, they've done in a number of countries now already. Is it really your money anyway?
Isn't that a good point? And I don't think most people think of it that way.
No, because their worldview is based on the type of worldview that they grew up in over the past 70 years.
My money's in the bank. It's my money, by God.
That's right.
But in this day and age, your money's in the bank. if they can take it, was it ever actually yours? And that's what the people in Canada start asking themselves. It's my money. If it's my money, really, then how is it I can't get to it? Well, because you were living under the illusion that it was your money. It was an illusion. You were led to believe that. And as long as you believed that, then the powers that be were very happy to let you continue with that line of thinking. It's becoming a more and more dangerous world, folks. A much more difficult world to navigate. This is something to consider and think about.
Because they have essentially weaponized money for all citizens throughout the planet.
Yeah. First COVID. No. The next saga begins.
There's, right? Dissent, any form of dissent, will cause deplatforming and demonetization simultaneously now. And this is why cryptocurrencies, this is why Bitcoin was invented. It was invented just for this type of global crisis.
Yeah, so it's the people's money. That's what you said many times in the past.
The people's world reserve currency.
Right.
So we determine, everybody, nobody and everybody determines the value of that currency at a global scale. That does not exist for the U.S. dollar or any currency. Right. The only thing that comes closest to that is precious metals. But here's the problem, right? If the COMEX market, where no one takes physical delivery ever, determines the price that's being regulated and determined by central banks and too big to fail financial institutions that keep suppressing the price of gold for various political expediency reasons, then is the gold really, who owns the gold then? If the value of the gold, regardless whether you own it or not, is constantly being suppressed because no one actually takes delivery on the gold, nobody on COMEX, and it's being determined by derivative contracts by too big to fail entities.
Yeah.
Then what is, right? Do you really own the value of the gold? Is the world, is price discovery on a global basis determining the price of gold? And I would argue the answer is no.
Jane had a question here. Let me just go jump to that for a second. I think it's important to answer it. So the Trezor is like an external hard drive or jump drive. Yes, it is.
It's more like a computer. It's more like an intelligent hard drive. It's a storage appliance that completely interacts with both your computer and the Bitcoin or cryptocurrency network.
Yeah, exactly. So Jane, it's a tiny. You know how the computers? What the hell did I just do? There we go. It's a tiny, like in your car, you have a computer in your car, runs everything. Well, if you take it all down to the bare elemental aspects of it, it's not that large. This is a computer. It really is. It has a screen. You input data on it. And once you have it set up, personalized to you, as long as no one else knows what that data is, then you can just punch it in and it unlocks. The other thing, and maybe Kathy has that over, do you have that YubiKey over there?
Yeah.
We got two of these. They're called a YubiKey. YubiKey. This is an authenticator.
What's the code?
Oh, the code?
Yeah. Give it to me.
What was the code? I hope you remember. I don't recall.
Oh, it's called Give It To Me.
Give It To Me. That's what the code is. You're going to be surprised by this. Talk about a jump drive, Jane. I want to show you this. You're going to see it's got a little hole in it. Anyway, take a look at that. I'll put it against my hand so you can maybe There. You see that? Where my finger's touching, that is USB-C drive. Oops, get it back on camera. At the other end of it is the little thing that goes in the bottom of an iPhone because we have iPhones. So you notice here on the side, see that little tab? There's no little tab. These don't push in. I don't know how the hell it works. But when this is plugged in and you go on to Coinbase, is a good example, or to access within the, there's an app for Trezor. You want to download and have that. You're going to have this plugged in. And of course, this is something else that gets programmed. And when you plug it in, you try to get into, say, Coinbase. You put in your, you know, you're logging into the website, put in your credentials, click OK, and then a gray window pops up and says, touch your security key. When I first did this, and William was laughing at me, because I had it down here. It's not where I can see it. And I thought, well, you just touch it. So I'm touching it, nothing. If you don't do it in a certain amount of time, time's out, start over. So I'm like, what the hell? How? What do I touch? And William said, you see those little things on the side? Just put your fingers on either side of that. Just squeeze it a little bit. And I did. And by golly, the gray window said, hi, glad you made it back. What do you want to do? I could not get in even to my Coinbase account once I set it up without this. And I can't get into this without this.
That's right. It makes it, folks, it makes it virtually impossible to hack your Coinbase account or any crypto account that you have once you set it up with your YubiKey.
Mm-hmm.
So it is, this is another layer of the security defense that gets put in place. And so therefore they can't hack your accounts. They're not able then to move the money anywhere. So you have total control of your money.
So talk about security. I mean, that's more security than you're going to have at the bank.
That's right.
I mean, this is like an unparalleled level of security. And that little hole I was telling you about, you see it there. That little hole, so it goes on your key ring. But with this, I can plug it into my phone, put it in the bottom, and do all the same functions that I do here on the computer. And in fact, with this, I'm not sure, I haven't looked to see if there's an app. I imagine there is a phone app. I could use this with my phone, and I don't have to be in front of the computer to do this. It truly is astonishing to me, a level of technology and security that I've never encountered before. So, to answer your question, I think that did answer your question, Jane. She just said, where do you get these? I got my YubiKey on Amazon. And I got the Trezor on the... right there. Leanne88 wrote down. It's Trezor, T-R-E-Z-O-R .io. I ordered mine from them. I paid a little extra so it would get here quickly. William said, you're at great risk. Your Coinbase could be hacked. Like, oh, okay, so I'm on it. And I got it in here like really fast.
Right, so now your Coinbase is unhackable and your money is inaccessible by anybody. Right, including the federal government. So they can't seize your money. It's impossible for them to access it. So this is what people need to keep in mind, that your money is not yours. And that's the other thing too is Bitcoin is the best store of value historically. It's outperformed everything for the past 12 years, including gold, silver, hedge funds, oil, any commodity, the stock market. It continues to outperform spectacularly. So it is the best and most secure and most fungible and most transferable store of value than anybody can have on the planet.
Yeah. And nobody except those you might want to know, who knows who that might be, if there is anybody, but no one except those persons, like for me, Kathy, knows really how much money you've got. You might have billions. No one can find out if you've got billions on that little gizmo on the Trezor. You could have $1 trillion worth of goods on there, trillion, and dress like a hippie from the 60s, and nobody would know. It's completely secure. It's completely private. So I thought, you know, it would be good to bring this to your attention, because I know many of you are like, I don't know about this Bitcoin thing, Coinbase, and all that. how secure is it? So forth.
I think this skepticism is simply out of ignorance, Jerry, and it's not. That has nothing to do with intelligence.
No.
It's right. We're talking about ignorance in the pure sense of the word, where one isn't aware, right? And one takes certain axiom and postulates about the way the world is for granted, as if they are immutable. And just so you know, I think you already know this, but the speed of light, right, is supposedly like based on an immutable speed, based on what was determined back at the time of Einstein when he came out with his theory of relativity. Right. Then they made a discovery that the speed of light changes every year, quite a bit, right? So even the universe, the universal laws, right? They work within a certain construct, but they change. They're not immutable. So just like money, the whole system of money and currency that was established on the American Rules Base of Order in 1945 with the Bretton Woods system is now going through a massive transformation, and the idea of physical dollars and fractional reserve banking and commercial banking is absolutely collapsing right now. And that's part of the underpinning behind why we are having such massive geopolitical world disorder.
Yeah, you're right. Jane says she has an Android. You can get a connection that'll go into your Android. It's not a problem. And Leanne88 has a very good point here. She says, don't buy Trezors and such devices on eBay, Amazon, etc., or any aftermarket resellers, because they could be tampered with hacking software designed to scam you. Always buy from the company official website. I completely agree with that. So Jane wants to know, can you transfer a whole retirement account to Bitcoin? And what about taxes?
Yeah, so that if you have a taxed, a tax-protected instrument that you hold all your, like a Roth IRA, for instance, or a 401k, you're going to have tax consequences that, so first of all, anyone who's considering doing that, rolling that over into Bitcoin, right, they want to certainly talk with their CPA, but it may not have to come down to that. We're going to have a spot Bitcoin ETF this year, sometime this year. We know this is a fact now that Biden, in a surprising move, and this surprised me as well, he came out with an executive order where they are moving forward with Bitcoin. They are moving forward with cryptocurrencies. They are now within over the next 60 days. They're going to begin to integrate it and make it part of the actual central financial system. In other words, it'll be a derivative or part of the broader financial system. So that's all been greenlit. And what's going to happen is you'll see companies like Schwab, Fidelity, Vanguard, BlackRock has already decided to go all into Bitcoin, for instance. And they're going to come up with their Bitcoin ETFs that you can include inside of your 401k, for instance. And you can then reallocate a good chunk of your 401k into that spot Bitcoin ETF. Well, that would be my recommendation. So you don't have to necessarily take the tax consequence, get out of your 401k or get out of your Roth IRA. right? You can stay right within that structure, but reallocate the money from bonds, for instance, which keep losing money. That's a big loser, and move it into Bitcoin. So you just have stocks and Bitcoin, and you'll be good to go.
Yeah, good answer.
And remember, Bitcoin outproduced, like, in other words, if you had a, like, my crypto portfolio within a few short years, within 2-3 years, surpassed my entire Roth IRA Vanguard portfolio. I had a Vanguard set of Vanguard index funds within that Roth IRA that I've been investing in continuously since 2001. And so I was pounding money in every week, and within 2-3 years of just my crypto, reached parity with that and then surpassed it dramatically in terms of value. And that's what will start happening. And when I saw that moment where it's like, wow, I've only been in crypto for like 3-4 years, and now it's like an equal value to my entire IRA, I had that orange pill moment.
Yeah,
just
sure.
Like you did.
Yeah.
And you said, you know what? I'm stupid. I need to be putting more money, and I should have put more money in, because I would have been not just, you know, in good financial standing. I could have been a multimillionaire if I would have put in more money back in the day earlier. So that was my orange pill moment. And yeah. The reason I got into this, as you know, Jerry, is, you know, I was seeing something in the astrology saying we're going to see a massive change in the entire financial system, but most importantly, in the currency. What has value, the actual token or currency, is going to go through a transformation, not just the banking sector, not just the financial markets. That will only be an after effect of what fundamentally changes itself, which is the currency. And currency is like the lifeblood of an organism.
Yeah, it absolutely. In whatever form it takes.
That's right.
And I want to get into some of the astrology here in just a minute. Leanne 88 had a very good point here. Another good point. You're doing so well, Leanne 88. Remember when the U.S. government made it illegal to own gold? If they decide to do the same with crypto and you have it stored in your hard wallet, then they cannot get it from you or even know you have it. And that's a very valid point.
Right. So we, you know, this whole thing was put to rest today because after months of pressure from entrepreneurs and venture capitalists, the White House finally did something very slow, right? But that's typical Biden in dealing with the whole Bitcoin and crypto regulation. So that's why Biden put out an executive order. Basically, Janet Yellen, the Treasury Secretary, right, was then basically coerced, right, because she's very anti-Bitcoin, very anti-crypto, right, to move forward with integrating crypto into the larger financial system, but not only the larger financial system, to integrate it and to make it so that the U.S. dollar, becomes the government-backed security that backs and binds all crypto, the value of all crypto transfer, mainly through the use of stable coins. So stable coins is what tethers the crypto world with the actual central financial world or banking world. So it's that bridge, and all stable coins worldwide have actually true assets based on the US dollar. So without stable coins, Bitcoin would literally have no value. There would be no off-ramp or on-ramp for Bitcoin. So what that means is that the US government has a vested interest in ensuring that the US dollar maintains its world reserve currency status. And in order to make that happen, they need to make sure that they regulate it, and that ensures that Bitcoin in the crypto system will have not only value, but will depend on the US dollar for stable coin trade settlement. And what that means, folks, is simply this. If you want to cash out your Bitcoin. Let's say you move your Bitcoin from your wallet onto Coinbase. You want to swap it now in back into your bank account. You can simply do that by taking that Bitcoin and converting it instantly into a USDC stablecoin. And any bank or financial institution has to accept that, right? With no question, they have to accept that as trade settlement that will show up in your actual fiat currency or fractional reserve lending bank account.
I see.
Right? So that is what happened today.
Wow.
Yeah. Big breakthrough. So all this talk, folks, everyone, oh, it can be made illegal. You don't get it, William. I hear this every day. Yeah. They don't know what you're, you know, like it's over. Let's just wave, you know, they waved the white flag because of this. If stable coins worldwide, all markets, Chinese markets have to use US-based stable coins, meaning that stable coin is backed by one physical US dollar, which they have to have in a reserve somewhere that gets audited and regulated, that ensures the US dollar hegemony as a world reserve currency, right? And that also makes it possible for Bitcoin to become a world reserve currency at the same time. Both work to each mutual benefit.
So does China have a stable coin of their own?
They have a CB, a central bank digital currency, which is backed by the Chinese government, which is a digital yuan, a CBDC, which is a central, not a decentralized currency, but a centralized. It's not even a stable coin. It's different.
Okay.
And that's what they're doing to rival Bitcoin. They are more worried about Bitcoin than the US dollar.
I see.
So the US government realizes, well, we need to beat China to the punch and basically just move forward with this and to regulate and integrate the entire crypto system and make sure it is backed by US dollars. That will mean that all different crypto markets will need to have US dollar-based liquidity behind it in order for cryptocurrency exchange and trade settlement to commence and for Bitcoin and other cryptocurrencies to have a store of value.
Okay, I see.
Yeah.
Wow, it's a complicated subject.
Yes, it is. But you know what it does? It gets you, it's like, Jerry, as you get deeper into this, you'll realize, wow, I really understand what makes up a currency, what makes a currency more valuable than another currency, how you can do your own valuation. And then when you realize this, you say, well, okay, I understand how Bitcoin has value, right? Based on the seven different criteria, what defines a currency, how it has value and all that stuff. But you can determine other currencies, including when you compare it to fiat, you realize how problematic fiat currency is. And that's why everybody at some point, we're going to have that critical threshold where we're going to have we're going to have a good chunk of people have that orange pill moment when they realize they need to get out of their physical dollar back-based instruments, such as, you know, stocks, bonds, et cetera, and move it into a crypto blockchain token base, right? That's much more dynamic, that gives them much more options, that actually increases in value, that is deflationary instead of inflationary. So that moment will happen at a mass scale sooner rather than later based on my forecast.
One last comment here I think would be good to go to before we go into the astrological part of it. Because I read this briefly. I want to see what it says for sure. this is Thag, THAG, Thag 045. It says, how do I convert my 401k money that's held by a certain company? Do I call them and ask them to convert it? I think maybe you addressed that earlier, but maybe they came in late. So what can you say about that?
Yeah, well, if you have a 401k, you're really, really limited because they actually determine what you can invest in, what you cannot invest in. That's why I recommend that people move their 401k into an IRA or a Roth IRA as soon as you can, because then you have the option then to control what your money is vested and allocated in.
Okay.
You don't get that option with the 401k. In fact, Robert Kiyosaki, Rich Dad, Poor Dad, he has a book that just came out. Well, it came out a couple of years ago, but it's a book that continues to sell very well. Who stole my 401k? And the whole 401k system is in very serious trouble. I suggest everyone who's of the age of 55 and older who has a 401k to read that book, to get that book right now. It's not a hard read. Who stole my 401k?
I've been watching. Kathy and I actually have been watching Kiyosaki on YouTube. What a brilliant fellow this guy is. And he's right over here in Scottsdale. He's closer to us than he is to you.
Right. You ought to stop on over and have a beer with him when you can.
Yeah. Or give him a call and say, hey, come on the show. Right. I think it'd be fun to have him on.
Sure. I'm sure he would come on.
So let's go into the next part of this. You know, and if you folks have any other questions about this, then, you know, of course, we're going to open the phone lines here in a little bit, but if you want to put it into the chat room, that's fine. I'll read your questions. Because I know you have a lot to learn. You know, Jane, a good friend of ours online, you know, she's trying her best to figure this stuff out, and we're trying to help her. And for the rest of you, if you have questions, you can always contact me. I'll be happy to answer if I know the answer, and if I don't, well, I have to pass it over to William. And incidentally, you may have noticed that it's that time of night where we have a cup of chaos. It's a tasty cup of chaos. And you could be having a tasty cup of chaos with us right now. I need to get you one of these, William. Wouldn't that be fun? So anyway, if you're interested, you can go to jerrywellshow.com, scroll down, you'll see where to order your personal tasty cup of chaos. And if you don't know already, on the back, it says evolve, no dogma. I take that to heart. And speaking of evolution, you've been crunching the numbers on star charts and astrological charts. And I think it's just right there on everyone's lips. You've been so incredibly accurate in the past on what you've had to say looking forward. And, I bet folks would like to know what you think about the current state of events. And, well, you have an Area 51 cup.
That's right.
Let's see that. Warning, Area 51, no trespassing. That's pretty groovy.
Yes.
I like that.
I'm having my moment of chaos right now.
Yeah, it's a whole different level of chaos, isn't it?
That's right. And that's the type of chaos I see us moving towards, unfortunately.
Yeah, I bet. So tell us, what have you found out? What do you see? What's the story here?
Well, I mean, there's a lot to say. The astrological community has known for a long time that the U.S. was going to be entering its first Pluto return, and Pluto rules empires. Pluto rules, it rules events that are considered world-changing, tour de force events that have significant ramifications that define not only the decade, but a century going forward. Something equivalent to like World War I, World War II, but certainly much closer to what we saw with the outbreak of the First World War. Pluto deals with geopolitical power struggles. We've seen this historically going back over 500 years between a established world power and a set of rising, challenging powers. It also correlates with purging purging collective forces that get released into the world, such as what we see with happening with the weather, titanic forces that result in earthquakes, volcanoes, superstorms, result in populist uprisings that set the precedents for massive, you know, like sort of like a breaking loose, cathartic, all hell's breaking loose, cathartic set of events in the body politic of nations, with economic systems, with finances. So it correlates with systemic financial crises and political power struggles and schisms, schisms as a result of wealth disparity, culture wars, class wars, financial struggles between the haves and have-nots. It also, so it represents those type of things that happen in the world, fateful developments on the world stage, foreign policy crises, similar to what we saw back with the Cuban Missile Crisis, similar to what we saw back with the emergence of the fascism in Europe, what we saw in World War One with the outbreak, you know, the outbreak of World War One. We also see during Pluto periods like revolutions where we've seen historically going back to the time of Rome, where Rome was a republic, just like the United States. It had its own elected officials. It had a Senate. It had the president of the Senate. It had a king, right, which was equivalent to a president. It had elected officials such as judges. It had, you know, it had a military force, a conscription. You know, they had taxes. So they had very similar. And during their Pluto return, it went from a republic and transformed into an empire. It transformed from a democracy, a form of, you know, a republic-based democracy into a plutocracy. It went from a form of capitalism, or, you know, was probably not the type of capitalism we experienced during the Industrial Revolution of the 1820s, but more of an agrarian-based, mercantile-based capitalism, or an early form of that, where there was free trade going on within the Mediterranean. And it went from that to crony capitalism, where you had a too-big-to-fail power elite or too-big-to-jail power elite. And then would also went from democracy to a totalitarian democracy. So we're seeing that play out. Also, the dark side of Pluto is sort of the id. It has to do with instinctual forces that take hold within the collective. Pluto's very aggressive. It's brutal. It's obsessive. It's compulsive. It forces and coerces change. It is heavy energy, lots of power, lots of domination, right? And it's very much connected to conflict and warfare, but not warfare for the sake of war, but as a symptom or expression of a larger geopolitical struggle for global dominance.
If you've enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and leave us a comment. Subscriptions and your comments cost nothing, but it really helps us out a lot. To hear the entire interview you were just listening to, and many, many other amazing interviews within our archives, please visit jerrywillsshow.com and become a member. Your membership supports our ongoing broadcasts. That's jerrywillsshow.com. Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoyed this program.